Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And each week, this program is about the unfolding of consciousness, how we're evolving as a civilization, where we are moving to collectively, and how, what are the tools that we need at this time in our evolutionary history to fulfill a certain destiny. So tonight's program, I think, will address some of those issues. I'll be talking to astrologer Chris Fleischer, and he's an artist, and he's a really in-depth astrologer. And we're going to be talking really about 2012 and why this year is such an important turning point in the history of consciousness. That's what I would say. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Alan. Thank you very much for having me on.
You know, I think of astrology as psychic weather, as the weather of consciousness, the times and the currents of what's going on in our collective field.
Yeah, that's very, very, very accurate. I think that's exactly what I mean. I use those same that same terminology when I refer to astrology. It really is about a cultural psychic sort of weather report, and you really do have an opportunity to see what's coming down the road, because you've got aspects and lineups within alignments within the planets that show where things are going, and you have some sort of preparedness as a result.
Right. And I know you're a really good personal reader, you know, doing individual charts. And I think you gave me a really good reading, accurate reading and helpful. But, you know, I don't want to go through my stuff tonight, because I think what you're also good at is this collective point of reference. And you say we're going through now a cardinal time where certain outer planets are in cardinal signs, which makes it a time of initiation, a time of beginnings and awakening. So can you go into why 2012 is this time of new beginnings and what that really means and where we're going?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are sort of like the universe is sort of operating on a clock. And the clock is the best analogy I can use, because we really are different hands move at different motions. So we have, you know, the hour hand, we have the minute hand, and we have the second hand. And when we look at the hour hand is really the one that's most important, because it shows the longer term trends that are in place. When we look at those planets that are in cardinal signs, now cardinal signs, there's three kinds of signs in astrology. There's cardinal signs, fixed signs, and mutable signs.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to get that idea of the clock before we go. Because I never thought of it that way. So the inner planets are like seconds and minutes, and the outer planets are like hours.
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That is very. So we're moving into a new hour,
Yeah.
Okay.
And the hour, of course, the hour moves slower. So we see, when you look at the outer planets, it's just like looking at a bicycle wheel. If you looked at a bicycle wheel and you saw into the near the hub, you saw planets moving quickly. As you move to the outside of the outer wheel of the bicycle wheel, you'd see planets moving slower. It's the slower planets, the outer planets, that really dictate real change, because they move slowly and they affect whole generations. We're in the midst of that right now, because we've got Pluto in Capricorn and we've got Uranus in Aries, both of which are cardinal signs. So,
you know, I just wanted to interrupt. Sorry, but it just stimulates these ideas, and we'll get to them. It's just that when you said that the outer planet, you know, wasn't the outer planets really weren't discovered until we had sort of a global consciousness. So it's interesting along those lines. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So the planets were discovered at exactly the times that they needed to be discovered. So as we entered the age of plutonium and the age of uranium and all of that, we found Pluto. So these planets were discovered at the appropriate time. Neptune was discovered at a time when mass psychology and the subconscious were as part of the dialogue. Uranus was discovered when revolution was part of the dialogue. These planets have come into our context in that relationship. It's very accurate.
But the
fact that we have activity in those cardinal areas indicates a massive propensity, and that means potential, for change of the most profound manner. This cannot be stated more, cannot be stated strongly enough. Because the planets are there, they are going to affect over 10, like in the case of Pluto, we're talking about 10 to 15 years of radical change where things get torn down and then rebuilt for a new structure. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that in the government. We're seeing that in the financial industry. We're seeing that in the spirituality and the religion industry. We're seeing – industry is not the right word for religion, but it somehow it seems that way.
Well, it is sort of an industry.
It is. You're right. And we're, so we're seeing total restructure there, and the things are being torn down so that they can be rebuilt for a greater purpose. This is very critical. People understand that. And what's important is that we are at a point in time where potential is very, very real. And potential is the ability to move and change directions. And we have the opportunity to change that direction now. So we want to be able to capitalize on that.
I see. So, okay, you were going into what the cardinal signs were. There are three sets of – so there's earth, air, fire. There's 12 zodiac signs. Those 12 signs are divided into four elements. Each element has one of three different
– well, they're called mode. They're called modes.
Okay. Okay.
So there's three different modes. There's cardinal, which is all about beginning, initiating. So there's cardinal fire, cardinal water, cardinal air, cardinal earth. Then you move on to fixed signs, which is meaning that there's fixed – same thing. There's fixed elements, fixed water, earth, fire, air. And then there's mutable fixed – you know, mutable water, fire, air, and earth. So it's the same thing. So there's three modes that apply to the four elements that also apply to the 12 signs. And it's all mathematically correct.
Okay, so what is where right now? Neptune and Uranus is what we're looking at because these are the outer planets and they are –
well, Neptune, actually, Neptune is an interesting thing you picked up. But actually, the ones that we're talking about, which are cardinal, are Pluto, which is at 7 degrees Capricorn, mm-hmm. and Uranus is at 7 degrees Aries, which are both cardinal signs. Pluto is the most critical one to watch because of the simple fact that it's this—it's the sort of the planet that dictates enormous social, political, structural change that brings everything back to a spot where you need to redesign. It's almost like having your kitchen remodeled. I use this analogy quite frequently. If you think about having your kitchen remodeled, the carpenter comes in, he rips the sink out, he takes away the stove, he rips up the floor, and your whole heart of your life is torn away. And I'm speaking metaphorically. When that happens, you're sitting there, oh my gosh, what do? We have no way to go. But gradually, the new appliances come in. Gradually, the new floor gets put down. Gradually, the new counters get down. And eventually, you look back and you say, wow, we really needed to do that. And we're glad we did it. And at the end of the day, when the dust is gone, you're happy that you're there. But getting there is sometimes onerous. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like a dental appointment.
I use that analogy all the time. It's like going to get your teeth cleaned. Oh. It's not fun when you're doing it, but when you're done, you're so happy.
Okay, so Pluto is 7 degrees Capricorn.
Capricorn, yes.
And Capricorn is also a sign of restructuring. And
well, it's a cardinal earth sign, so it's all about like, you know, it's like rebuilding the house. It's rebuilding the house. It's like the house is in disorder. It needs to be rebuilt. So we're taking the windows out. We're taking the wallpaper down. We're redoing the floors. We're going to rebuild this house, and that's where we are right now. The United States is in that point right now.
So is it the United? So there's the birth sign, and then there are transits. So are you reading the in reference to the United States or to the planet itself?
Well, it's actually both. The reason I use the United States is because we sort of are a beacon of where society goes. But the same does apply to Europe. We did the chart for each individual European country, or did the chart for the planet, we'd see the same sort of events happening. And it really is about – because Pluto is affecting the planet. Because Pluto is affecting the planet, we all feel it. So we see this restructure happening everywhere. This really is a time to – I mean, we see it with the polar ice caps melting. This is sort of a wake-up call saying, hello, folks, time to wake up and fix things.
So Pluto's going to be in Capricorn for how long?
Well, typically 10 to 15 years. It's a very slow-moving planet because it's on an elliptical orb, so it takes a long time to move. You know, and so when we look at the ephemeris, which is what we use to dictate how long a planet's there, we can see that it's quite some time. So it's a very long process that takes place.
But then when it moves into Aquarius after Capricorn, what happens with Pluto in Aquarius?
Well, that's a whole other story. That's a different story altogether. We're not there yet.
Okay.
That's 15 years away. But you mentioned Neptune earlier as well. Neptune is returned to Pisces for the first time in our life. No one has seen Neptune in Pisces who's alive right now.
So what degree is Neptune in Pisces?
Neptune right now is at 1 degree retrograde in Pisces. It entered into Pisces back about, 6-8 months ago. It has not been here for 164 years. So the last time it was here, it was the 1840s. And so it has never been here. And no one who's alive has ever seen this. And this is the area that is actually rules. Pisces is the area that, the Neptune is most comfortable there. So it's a critical piece.
Neptune is really the mystical planet, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's sort of it's the subconscious. It's the collective subconscious. It's very much about illusion. It's about illusion. It's about addiction. It's about the fantasy. It's about movies. It's about escapism. It's about the collective subconscious. There's a very analytical piece to it. It's sort of about how we think and move. And I think it's critical at this point in time to see it here because this is where it's most at home. So it's elevated in some way. Its power is elevated in some way. So it has a greater meaning. And when we look at what the events that are happening right now, it's no small irony that this sort of surge of power is Mother Nature is actually asking us to wake up in some ways. It's asking us to somewhat, to really literally pay attention here.
How do you get to Mother Nature? Because what comes up for me when you say that is more the mystical awakenings, because the 1840s when it was there last was a time of spiritualism, and the real spiritual awakening happened in America that led into, it led into seances, but eventually theosophy and that whole.
Absolutely, yes.
So I would say it's more a time of mysticism, isn't it?
It's a time of mysticism, and it's a time of reawakening of that whole quality. We have to change the way we look at how we move forward. It's very critical, very critical that we change the way we look at how we move forward. So we have been of a mind that has been very sort of, mundane in some ways, very, based in, material gathering and trying to gain some sort of, comfort through material gain. We're entering a time where a lot of that is going to be negligible. It's going to be more about a collective spirit where people actually shift the way that they view things. And so this becomes a time where people actually serve themselves best when they serve each other. This is a time of, helping your neighbor. It's a time where we're not as isolated as we used to be. This is what I think is the theme.
I see. And so the other planet you also mentioned was Uranus is in Aries. Now,
Uranus in Aries is all about, it's about innovation. It's about starting anew. The fact that we just put a spaceship on the planet Mars and we're getting back, that's very much of a Uranus in Aries kind of event. The tsunami that happened in Japan is very much – Uranus is about rebellion. It's about rebellion. It's about upheaval. It's about change. It's about sudden, inexplicable – brilliant flashes of innovation. It's really about innovation. Think of the words. Uranus is about this. It's about rebellion, revolution, innovation, eccentricity, unusual kinds of events happen. It's very ripe for that kind of theme.
Well, I mean, there's always a Uranian component in the sky, but what does it mean to be in Aries then?
Well, Aries is the first sign. It's the sign of the ram. It's the beginning of the zodiac wheel. It's very much about new beginnings. It's all about shifting things to a new level. It's very much about starting over, really. It really is about starting over. You know, one of the interesting things about astrology is when they say, someone asked a question years ago about when did astrology start and what made it start when it started. It was when all the planets were aligned in Aries, because Aries is the beginning. When all the planets were aligned there, and they, of course, they all have their own mechanism, they're all operating at their own speed, and they're all operating at different levels, different frequencies. When that started, that was the beginning. So Aries really is the beginning. So when Uranus returns to Aries, we are seeing same, similar cultural, spiritual, financial themes that we saw 84 years ago when it was last there. So 84 years ago was the Great Depression. We saw similar themes happening then. We're now seeing the same kind of activity. It may not be a cookie cutter idea of what it was back then, but what we're seeing is the theme. The theme is about financial, it's about money, it's about rebuilding, it's about restarting.
So a great astrologer, and the ones that I really enjoy, the ones that then can weave a story or some kind of a formula or understanding of all the planets together. So we have Neptune just entering Pisces, we have Uranus 7 degrees in Aries, and we have Pluto 7 degrees in Capricorn, and each of those have those elements, but taken together as a kind of a overall flavor for the chart. How do you then make sense of those three aspects?
So what I see happening is we are primed for a time of revolutionary rebuilding. So Pluto brings the rebuilding, Uranus brings the revolutionary, and Neptune brings the quality of how we evolve. When we look at, so people who are familiar with mass psychology understand the concept of Maslow's hierarchy of cultural needs. So we've moved beyond the spot where we need, where food, clothing, and shelter. As a civilization, we are now into a realm where we have to work with the collective. And the collective really is about helping each other. It's not about me anymore. It's about how can I help people? And I see this in a very visceral level. Neptune really brings that tribal concept forward, whereby, you know, we are only as strong as our weakest link. This is a very, very critical point. It's almost the term I would use for it would be group process, whereby you always default to the weakest link of the chain, as this is a very strong metaphor. If the chain breaks at a certain point, the whole thing goes down. Because the chain is what holds together society. So if we don't pay attention to those that are weak and hindered by the rules of society, if we don't pay attention to them, if we ignore them, as some people are saying we should, if we turn our backs on them, eventually that will break the whole chain. It's important that we approach this period from a very transcendent tribal metaphor where we all watch out for each other. This is so critical. One of the interesting things I always use as an analogy is if you go to any city in America and you look at any American street, you're going to see 7 houses in a row on that street. And in each of those houses, you will see a lawnmower. But that lawnmower is only used one day of the week. Can you imagine what it'd be like if you had one lawnmower for 7 houses? If you can take that metaphor and expand that to your own world, how does it incorporate your philosophy? It's about sharing resources. It's about becoming more communal. It's about helping each other so that we get beyond this sense of, you know, being exclusive. We have to get beyond that. We need to be more inclusive.
Right. I heard it was sort of a capitalist plot for everyone to own their own lawnmower, their own blender, their own toaster, and it was sort of the industry of that kind of consciousness in the 50s, the 40s, 50s, the industrialization of America that was good for the economy but sort of separated people in their ways of thinking. And
I think it did separate people, absolutely. I totally agree with you.
But anyway, are you saying that astrology can, we have a choice. I mean, the astrology is what it is, but then we have a choice to act in a certain way, or is there really no choice because of the tendencies of the planets to move in certain ways?
Well, that's a good question. So here, again, it comes back to that term that I used earlier, which was potential. So when we look at a, and this is probably the best analogy I can give for you. When we look at an electric socket in a wall, there's potential there. So we know that if we stick our finger in there, we're going to get, you know, a shock. If we put a plug in there, we're going to get juice out. So potential is there for change. We are at a very ripe time for potential to change. How that change happens is kind of like walking a tightrope. And we can go one, we can go to the left, or we can go to the right. And I don't mean that to be, I actually do mean that to be literal. But, you know, it's not as if we're going to fall off the cliff either way, because you think of a tightrope as being, you know, if you're falling, you're falling. What I really mean is that on one side there might be a comfort, you know, a way to go that is more forward thinking than that of the other. And it really comes down to that concept of making conscious choices that evolve and move us forward. This is a very difficult thing to get across because the mass populace does not always feel this way. They have a very, you know, sort of a dictatorial fixed, using the word of astrology, a fixed way of looking at how we move forward.
Wait, are you saying so change, we are at a time of change. Change is happening. It's like, you know, winter is coming and you can either dress warmer or, you know, deal with the elements as it is. I think that's what you're saying. It's
coming. Yeah, that's a very good analogy. So yeah, we can walk around in Bermuda shorts and flip-flops as winter comes, or we can put our boots on and get our parkas out. And so here we are in a time when the universe is saying to us, okay, it's time to get the parkas out. Winter's coming. Buckle down, hunker down, get yourself ready. Or we can choose to ignore that. If we choose to ignore that, we're going to be caught by surprise.
Right, but I don't actually think it's a winter that's coming. I think they, no. You know, you can also have a choice of keeping your winter coat on and sweating through the summer. I think we're entering a time of openness and expansion, and it seems like those potentials are there, and those people that don't want to go with that will sort of be sweating in their winter coats, while other people will really be enjoying the movement of the time that will expand consciousness. That's what I
get. Perfect analogy. That is absolutely the best thing I've ever heard. And that's exactly what I think will happen. People who do not choose to go this way will, in fact, be sweating it. They will literally, I mean, because they have not chosen that way. And they, I think, perhaps may be left behind, because we really are at a time where you have to sort of take a much larger view. You've got to sort of back up and look from a much higher view, looking down at what's going on. And because you have that ability to look at a much larger area, you're able to see how society and cultures move. You know, your point about people sweating it out is exactly right on the money. There are people who will actually sweat it out because they have not made the right choice.
Yeah, but what are those choice? I mean, let's talk about that. So what are those choice? I mean, what is it? I mean, of course, it's like you're saying there, things are collapsing. Everyone can see the economic system definitely needs to be changing. The religious systems are falling apart. But what is it that people can do?
Well, for one, I think that they can stop being so self-centered. I think that's a large part of it. I think that they need to stop and realize that the more that they give outwardly, the more they will get inwardly. And I think that that may sound a little bit, you know, trite, but it really is a synopsis of what has to happen. Because we have become so self-centered and so me-oriented with our cell phones, with our Facebook accounts, with our Twitters, we've sort of lost the big picture here, which is about collaboration. I'm talking about working towards collaboration. It's like, you know, it's not about you anymore. It's about us. That's really a major distinction.
Well, you know, the irony about Facebook and Twitter and the whole social media is that you can take that two ways. It could be about me, or it can be a way of networking the planet. So we're kind of sewing these threads around the planet that transcend the me.
I understand that point, and that's probably where Facebook works. But it's the degree of the conversation that occurs. That's where it's most valuable. It's what is being said. It's not so much the fact that that Facebook exists, you know. And the web is a perfect example. I mean, Facebook is nothing more than an elaboration of what the web actually does. It does bring us closer together. And you or I would not be who we are today if it were not for the web. So I appreciate all that completely. It's the degree and the level of intelligence that we inject to what we put out there. Do we need to know that somebody had a really good sandwich last night? No. We need to know that, you know, that Uranus was in Aries, and we need to know things that are of greater value. It's not about the, it's not about the triviality. It's about elevating the conversation, elevating the dialogue to a place where we all gain something from our forward observation.
Right. But it's also not about telling people they can't talk about, you know, that they fed their cat, but it's showing the example that, you know, by sharing ourselves at that level, then other people can do that. And we can only do our own job, you know.
Well, but if think of it this way. If you were hosting a radio show and you were talking about feeding your cat and, cleaning your bathroom or whatever, how many people would really care? They'd say, well, that's great. Alan's cleaning his bathroom. He's feeding his cat. But that's not what's important. That's not what you do. What you do is you send out a message of, you know, raising consciousness. What you do is incredibly valuable. Raising consciousness, exposing people to new ideas. That has tangible value. That is not the same as putting new kitty litter in, okay?
Right. And I think that is, you know, what a lot of people are using the web for. And, of course, those people that don't want to use it for that, and they can use it for the same old trivial stuff that they've used everything elsewhere, is fine. But those that can use social media to start to connect these bigger ideas, I mean, look at the TED Talks. I mean, Those talks are revolutionary in the
beautiful stuff. Beautiful, I love
TED. So that's really the highest quality of the web, and we'll always have like a striations of values. But I think those people that are self indulgent in those ways, I mean, they just don't gain the audience that somebody who or things like TED that really fire the imagination start to gather that awareness. So, I mean, I think we just have to have examples of that, and people will start to come up out of those old indulgent patterns, you know?
Well, this is where you serve a very valuable function, because you are elevating the conversation. You are bringing the dialogue up to a spot where you're looking at, you know, cultural evolution. You're looking at moving society forward. TED is a perfect example of what is right about the web. It's exactly right. We don't need to know that Naomi had her goldfish. You know, we don't need to know certain things, but we do need to know that, you know, there's quality in what we can do as a collective group. You know, it is about that. So it's about elevating the dialogue to a higher dialogue, which is what you're doing.
Right, and it's what you're doing with your astrology too. I mean, of course, you do personal readings, and they're very helpful on a personal level. But I love the fact that you kind of give a whole overview of where we are as a planet, as a civilization, and what we can prepare ourselves for in this time, you know?
Well, it is accurate, and that is – it is about raising consciousness. So I think if I had to summarize in some way crisply, I would say that, you know, sort of as a society, and I guess I can only take this from the American point of view, we sort of have become very obsessed with ourselves. We're sort of very concerned with, you know, we got our nails done, we got our hair cut, we went to the mall, blah, blah, blah. It's all mindless chatter. We need to shift our focus to a much broader, larger context. That's what it really comes down to. Think bigger. When you think bigger, we have big problems. We have really big problems. And so what we need to do is make those problems even bigger. And when we make those problems bigger, then we pay attention to them. If the roof were not leaking, we would not fix it. But the roof is leaking, folks. The roof is leaking big time, so we need to fix it. That's what this sort of energy brings to the table, is this ability to say, wake up. We're not talking about your French fries right now. We're talking about the fact that the polar ice cap is melting. Pay attention.
Well, actually, you're right. I mean, the roof is leaking. The polar ice cap, they just reported, is the smallest it's ever been. You know, it's just lost a lot of its ice.
So this is a big, big, big topic. And people are worried about, you know, their French fries or their poodle, you know, going for a walk. This is where we need to focus. That's what I'm saying. It's more about elevating the dialogue.
And I think there's a more and more of a larger percentage of people, because of the internet, because of the interactions in the social media, that are concerned with these bigger issues. And so it's a time where, and I think that's what 2012 is sort of about as well, a time where this crystallization of consciousness is coming to a head, like where we'll really become, in a sense, a collective mind. And many people are weaving those opportunities to a collective awareness. So
right. And so you are at the leading edge of that, because you're bringing this to society through your radio show and through what you're doing. Your work is very much of a cutting edge, revolutionary, leading edge kind of stuff that you're talking about. I guess the frustration, and I probably am in the same ballpark as you, I think we are in cahoots with that regard, but what frustrates me is that it's the slowness with which people move. But I think that's probably just a process of evolution that, you know.
Yeah, it's always up to the lowest common denominator, but I don't think we can worry about the slowness of it. I mean, I think we can only do our part. And I know you are doing your part as an artist. You're an incredible artist, giving people's visions of their multidimensionality. What's your website so people can see your art?
It's just my name, www.chrisflischer.com, or turningofthewheel.com will also get you there as well.
That's Flischer,
F-L-I-S-H-E-R.
Right, and Chris.
Or turningofthewheel.com will get you there as well. If you go, my radio show is turningofthewheel.com.
All right, when's your radio show on?
It's every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. So it's very similar to, I'm trying to do very similar things as you. So.
Right. What? Where is it on? Where can we hear
it's
it?
It's on Contact Talk Radio.
ContactTalkRadio.com. Is that a .com?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get down to December 21st. The Mayans, for whatever reason, and I think they had a good reason, not like our calendar, but they chose a date where their long count, of course they had five different calendars, and we're just talking about the long count ending, and of course beginning the next day, but ending on December 21st, 2012, when the sun is moving into Capricorn, and that's aligning with the galactic center. So we have the galactic center, we have the sun, and we have the earth in a direct conjunction. And you know, there's something about eclipses or conjunctions when they're exactly 0 degrees, and that is different when it's off like a few degrees. Because if you've ever been in a full eclipse as opposed to a partial eclipse, there's a tremendous difference. So I think something can be said to that exact alignment. I mean, as an astrologer, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, the date of 21, you know, December 21st, 2012, is not as accurate as, a week later. If you go to December 28th, when the sun is actually aligned with Pluto, you have a much more crisp indication, because at the same time, the moon will be in Cancer, Uranus will be in Aries, Pluto will be in Capricorn, the sun will be in Capricorn. Then what we have is we have what's called a triggering effect, where we have an alignment, much the way you would get as if you were thinking about it, I guess metaphorically, the only way to really say it, is a cuckoo clock, okay? So all of a sudden the clock is clicking, 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 and all of a sudden the cuckoo clock comes out. The cuckoo comes out of the clock and says, cuckoo. So then events happen as a result of that click.
That's what day is that, you're saying?
Well, it's December 28th was when the sun will be conjunct Pluto you know, it'll be 7 degrees. Pluto will be 9 degrees. The 28th, 29th, 30th of December of 2012. So yes, we do turn a corner, but it's not as if a light switch is thrown where all of a sudden, boom, the world is different any more than it was at Y2K. These are slow, gradual movements, but I think that we sort of turn a corner, and the corner that is being turned will be indicative of
right.
what we see.
I mean, there are momentous moments in history, you know, 9/11, those World Trade Centers coming out, the assassination of JFK. Those are corners that are visibly turned, and you can see a whole shift of consciousness happens at
Absolutely.
Those moments. And
yep.
this is not one of those moments you're saying.
Well, I don't think it's going to be as definitive as that. It's not like, you know, President Lincoln getting assassinated. It's not like the sinking of the Titanic. Those are worldwide events that still ripple today. They still have huge impact today when we think back on those times. I don't see it as that kind of event. I see it more as a gradual turning of people and sort of like a mass acceptance of, you know, where we are. You know, it's about expectations. You know, we have lived our lives with a set of expectations that sort of set a standard saying, well, things are going to go this way. When we accept the fact that life is not about an expectation and we give into that, just the simple fact that we give into the fact that we cannot expect things to happen, no preconceived notions, just the simple fact that we recognize that is a huge shift in public thinking.
Right, I agree. You know, I was just thinking as you were talking about these momentous occasions. There, have you ever done the astrology for those moments? That and could you? Can you actually see that the sinking of Titanic or those? Not that those
Absolutely.
Things were. Can you see
Absolutely.
That those were momentous because
Absolutely.
Of the alignment? You can.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, when the Titanic sank. It was an incredibly powerful moment. April 14th, we just had the 100th year anniversary. I had a woman on my radio show who wrote a book about just this. And hugely revelatory kind of information came out of that because she found a common denominator which applied to all the people who were on that ship at that time. And she traced it back all the way through history, through when the ship was designed, the people who were responsible for the funding of it, the people who were driving it, the people who were on board of it. They all had a common thread which ran all the way through that. This is where astrology becomes incredibly rich.
What was that common thread, though?
Well, the common thread was Neptune at 23 degrees Cancer.
In their charts and all those
Yes, things. Yes, there was a common thread. They all had a common thread. And this is where these types of events, you know, there's when you think about the Titanic, okay, so there's three words in the world that people recognize, okay? They recognize the quality of God, they recognize the quality of God, of love, and the third thing that they recognize, regardless of the culture, is the Titanic. The Titanic left a very huge imprint because many of us could relate to that tragedy. It was a singular moment that sort of encapsulated a shift in public thinking. And I think we're at that cusp.
Do you know about that story that was written called The Sinking of the Titan? It was written about 30 years before the Titanic. It was sort of a prophecy of the Titanic.
I don't know that.
I'll send that to you. That's an incredible story about this guy who wrote a science fiction story about a huge ocean liner called the Titan that sunk by an iceberg, and that was printed in the 1890s. It really predicts the whole event that happened.
So my view is, it's so getting back to that whole concept of the roof not leaking, or the roof is leaking. That is sort of a roof is leaking kind of event, because when that happened, that forced humanity to stop and think about what it was doing, because it was so large of an event. It's kind of like getting in an automobile accident. You sort of like, wow, I just got in an automobile accident. I have to pay attention to what's going on. It's when you have that snap of recognition. Well, snap of, you know, that you have to change.
Yeah, the World Trade Center was like that too.
Perfect example. Perfect example. Yes.
But did we learn? Did those things flow? Did those people change? Did we change after 9/11? Or slowly we were shocked and slowly coming back to where we were? Or maybe we haven't. Maybe things have fundamentally shifted. And I don't know. I don't know.
Well, they have fundamentally shifted. And I would argue that whoever was driving the car at the time shifted it in the wrong way, is what I would say.
Uh-huh. I know with the Kennedy assassination, there was that it was sort of the doorway into the 60s that led to a kind of cultural revolution on all levels, in music, in art, in science, in every aspect. There was this opening that happened. So I think we go through these expansions and contractions culturally, and I think we – although you said that we've shifted in the wrong way, I think we're about to shift in the right way. I mean,
I would agree. And the Kennedy assassination really was a defining moment, because in him we had a character who was the epitome of hope, and all of a sudden that was shot to hell, and literally. And then we have this huge burst of creative, cultural, you know, epiphanies of every kind that radically shifted and still has an impact today. The generation that grew up then was a huge motivator for changing society. I think what happened then started what we're about to see now. We went into this phase where we became very lazy and, you know, and sort of lackadaisical. Now we are about to enter into a phase where that same sort of theme takes more root.
Well, was there a sort of astrological alignment from '64 into the early '70s when all that incredible music and culture really was revolutionary? I mean,
it was a Uranus-Pluto opposition. That's what it was. And then the seeds that were planted back then, which brought about civil rights, which brought about the feminist movement, all of those major cultural events were all started back then. The seeds were planted back then. The hippies had the right idea. They totally had the right idea. I was one of them. And that's not to blow my horn, but I'm saying to you that whatever was started back then was right. We got off track. We need to get back onto that track. You know, the idea of communal living, the idea of sharing resources, the idea of being one big, huge tribe was the right idea. We got a sneak preview, and we need to return to that.
Right. And I think we are returning to that. You know, it's interesting that Neil Armstrong just died.
I know. Yeah.
And that was sort of a kind of, and that began with John Kennedy. He said, no, we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of the 60s. And he was the man we put on the moon. And now we have this whole exploration of Mars that's happening. So there's something about the beginning and endings of eras that we can notice. So I think the other thing that you said that's so interesting about Uranus is that these unusual types of occurrences, these sort of strange occurrences happen with Uranus.
Yeah, they're very much out of the blue. They sort of like hit you unexpectedly. And it's the stroke of innovation. It's the stroke of genius. It's that flash of brilliance. It's that epiphany moment, you know, when people just, boom, all of a sudden get a snap of reality.
Do you think anything to do with UFOs could happen at that moment?
Actually, I do. You know, I've had this conversation in private with several of my friends where I actually do think we might get outside intervention of some sort.
Do you see that in the astrology, a particular astrology?
Well, I think that the astrology lays the groundwork for that, sets the stage for that type of event to happen. Absolutely.
Well, what astrology particularly do you see that could hint at that event unfolding?
Well, I think that the square is the huge piece. The square in astrology is when there's a 90-degree alignment between two planets. We see Uranus and Pluto in a square. So they're together. They're together for a period of time. And I think that because they are fairly much stable in that square, what will happen is that as the sun, the moon, or other major planets move into a placement that triggers that square, that's when we'll see action.
Oh, okay, because they're in a square because Pluto's 7 degrees Capricorn and And Uranus is 7 degrees.
So that's fairly stable.
That's a square.
That's there. The potential is there. That's sort of like the electric socket. So what happens when the sun moves into and opposes Pluto or squares Uranus? What happens when that happens? So that's coming up. The sun is going to be moving into Libra, which is the cardinal air sign. So when the sun moves into Libra, a cardinal air sign, and the moon shifts its way up into Cancer, which is another cardinal water sign, what happens at that time? What do we look?
What do you think could happen? What do you?
Well, I mean, that's a time of a huge import. It's a time of revelation. It's a time when events that once signified, potential. So let's just look at this one point in time. Let's look at September 29th, for example. Okay, on September 29th, we have the sun is at 7 degrees Libra, cardinal air. Pluto is at 6 degrees Capricorn, cardinal earth. Uranus and the moon are at 6 degrees cardinal fire. So we have this enormous T-square of activity. What happens on that day? I'm not going to go out on a limb and predict. I just know that the potential for a radical sort of change is at that point in time.
Wait, so the sun and moon are in opposition? Is that?
Yes. Yes.
And so that means it's a full moon, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So September 29th, the full moon is a full moon within this square. And that is another one of those trigger points that you're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely, yes, yes. It's going to be a full moon in Aries because the sun is going to be in Libra. So anytime the sun, whatever sign the sun is in, the moon has to be in the opposite sign in order for the full moon to happen. So the sun will be in Libra, the moon will be in Aries, and of course at that point in time it'll be sitting right next to Uranus. And that I think is a triggering moment. It'll be interesting to see what happens on that day. You know, when Mars moved into Libra, which it did recently, Mars was moving across in Libra. And on the date that it was that exact same position by degree. So we're talking about 7, 6, 7, 8 degrees was the day of the Colorado shooting. Now, Mars is the planet of aggression. So that would be indicative of that kind of aggression. But it just shows you that that happened at that time.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm saying. So we have these three cardinal, this 6 degrees Libra, and then this 7 degrees Capricorn, this 7 degrees Aries. The three of those signs are all cardinal signs, and you say that's a trigger point for a Uranian type of or a –
Well, I think it's a trigger. I think I do see it as a Uranian trigger. I do. Uh-huh. I see it as a revolutionary kind of trigger that sort of brings our awareness. That's what I would say. It's kind of like a flashlight going off. Or, you know, in the old days when you and I were growing up and somebody took a photo of us and the flash cube went off, that's sort of what will happen. It's sort of a moment of awareness. You know, it's sort of like, boom, okay. We have a flash.
So that you would say that's a really key day to look at coming up.
Well, I think it's something to be mindful of, and I think people should be careful about where they are. They should plan where they are on that day. They should think about what they're doing. I wouldn't take that day lightly.
Okay. Is there any other days coming as we wrap up here? But we have a little bit of time left. But is there any other days like that? That we should, like you said, that December 28th is another day, sort of like, but anything in the next 6 months or a year that.
Well, those are important days. Anytime you have any activity that is driven by the cardinality, meaning that the sun or the moon or any planet moves into a cardinal activity. So the other day, for example, so Venus is in Cancer right now, but when Venus was at 6 or 7 degrees Cancer, which was also a cardinal water sign, that was the day that Todd Akin came out with his comments about, you know, abortion and rape. You know, the senator, the representative from Missouri. This was the day he came out. This is a huge revelation. And it totally brought this whole concept of, you know, the rights of the feminine, the rights of females and the rights of where things are going politically to the forefront. This was a real triggering moment.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about that conjunction of Venus passing in front of the sun on was it June?
The Venus transit. Yeah.
Yeah,
The Venus
that's something the Mayans particularly were.
Well, the Venus transit is always huge because it is something that it what the Venus transit actually did was it allowed navigation to go forward, because not having that point, and this is a geometric function, not having that point did not allow humanity to move forward with navigation. So it was huge.
What do you mean move forward with navigation?
Because they were able to use what's called a triangulation is the word for it, because they were able to plot the Sun, the Earth, and Venus. They were able to actually navigate the planet Earth as a result of understanding the Venus transit. That's what that brought to the world.
Who was able to navigate the planet Earth?
All of us. And before the transit of Venus happened, sailors, when they went across the ocean, did not know where they were. There was no way for them to navigate. They had latitude down. What they didn't have was longitude.
Oh, and historically you're talking about.
Yes, historically. So longitude came as a result of the transit of Venus.
Oh, so in this past Venus transit, I mean, besides this guy from Missouri, was there anything else of significance? Some people talked about the return of the feminine, the divine feminine. Is there anything like that?
Well, I think we're definitely headed that way. I think it's a very slow moving process. We are headed towards that. We're headed towards that way. I think we've left behind. I think if 2012 has any message at all, it's about a shift from a warrior masculine energy to a healing feminine energy. And that's what people need to embrace. It's like we need to heal. We need to be comforted. We need to be kind. We need to evolve to a spot where we're not angry. We're not having mass shootings. We are comforting people. Instead of shooting people, we're giving out bread and soup to people. This is where we need to go.
Right. I mean, there are the revolutions that will happen in the Middle East, in places where people have been oppressed and restricted. Those things have to flare up and move out to a kind of freedom.
Well, I would also argue that those events are necessary in order to get action. You know, it's kind of like when I look at an astrology chart, if things are very comfortable on an astrology chart, people don't do anything. They sit on the sofa and they eat potato chips. Okay? What we need is we need to have action. Action comes from events. When events are difficult, then people move. This is what builds character. This is what builds promise.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. I mean, I think you're right. It also makes a good movie. You know, that's what you say. If you're writing a script, you need resistance for the character to overcome.
That's a very good analogy. That's actually very crisp. That's right on the money.
Right. So that's what we're at. We're at the climax of a really good movie right here.
Well, we're entering into the movie where the suspense is building, I think. Yeah, it's a very good analogy. I like that.
And what will be the outcome? Will it be a comedy or a tragedy? You know.
Well, I think we have free will in that regard, and yeah. I think we have the ability to shift that. That's what I'm trying to say. And as you are too, you're trying to say, let's move on, society. Let's get this stuff together. Let's figure it out.
The other thing I want to ask you, particularly in reference to the Mayan calendar in 2012, is this whole idea of the Earth and the solar system moving above the galactic equator. This is what people who have looked at the Mayan calendar and made their own ideas up about it say is happening. So we're in a different neighborhood in the galaxy, and I think that there's something to that, especially because our solar system hits the galactic plane at a very strange degree. Do you know about the planes?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
What degree is the plane of the solar system hitting the equator of the galaxy?
Well, the whole idea is that we are at a point in time where we're able to. You know, if we think of our placement in time and history as significant, when we shift that placement, we have entered a new realm. and the energy is going to be different at that point in time. So that does allow us to actually enter into a whole new dialogue. Without that ability to shift into that, we wouldn't happen. So that is actually a physical outward manifestation and actually an impetus to change. It's really very critical.
And so it is true that you sense that we're moving to a different place within the galactic relationship.
Absolutely, yes. I think that's part of evolution. Evolution is not only is it a emotional, intellectual kind of movement, it's also a physical movement.
Right, because, you know, that's what creates the seasons. It's the tilt of the Earth against the solar plane that creates the seasons on Earth. So my theory is it's the tilt of the solar plane to the galactic plane that will create a new season in consciousness, and that's where we're moving into.
Right, and we see this all bubbling up within the you know, I always use the United States because we see this such, you know, very rich activity happening there. You know, on one hand, we have the Olympics where we have this huge worldwide party. But on the other hand, we have the United States where we have this huge divisive kind of energy happening where people are going left or right. And there has to be something that comes out of that whole package.
Right. And as far as the election, it does look like Obama. We don't have to worry about someone like Romney getting in.
Well, I don't want to take that for granted.
Okay.
I really don't.
Okay.
I don't want to take that for granted. And the only reason I say that is because I don't want people to become lazy about that. I want them to become warriors about that and get out there and keep the momentum going that we have. You can't expect this mess that was created to be cleaned up in 4 years. This is a long-term project. This is a massive, you know, cleanup. That was the mess that was made prior to disastrous. Disastrous, right. Disastrous mess.
Right, and
you
I think
can't
expect
this.
And someone like Romney, I don't think really has an idea or a focus. Or
he's regressive.
Yeah,
he's regressive. It's going to actually make it much worse. I think
it would be awful.
I do.
I don't think we have to worry, but I do agree we have to get out there and take action, at least to maintain the momentum, because I think things are changing. I think we are coming into a really great uplifting moment of humanity. I think this is what we've been waiting for millennium. This moment in history, a kind of activation of a collective awakening.
Yeah, I think collective awakening is the right word, which is exactly what you are trying to do through your radio show and your television show. It's very key that people understand that message. And I think it can't be stated enough. I think, you know, people become very blasé about some of these concepts, but we have to keep hammering away and make sure we're diligent and dogged in our message to them, because we have to counteract the other kind of media that is doing just the opposite.
Right. Thomas Jefferson said the price of freedom is vigilance.
Yeah, I think that's very true. So we have to be, like, you know, nonstop out there.
And we are. I mean, for the most part, I know me, you, lots of people are going for it, because in a way it is also for us, our own evolution, but we know we're not separate anymore. You know?
Yeah, we're really at a critical point in history. I think that if you look at the history of the world, if we were ever to look back 200 years from now, we would see this as a defining moment. And how we move forward from this moment is really, really important. So we're really at that fork in the road.
Mm, great, great. Well, I mean, thank you, Chris, for all the amazing information.
Wow, great.
Yeah, you know, I know you're going to be on the television show, and I think we could go further into some of these topics, but I also would like to talk about sort of the backbone of all of it, which is a sort of hermetic philosophy.
Yeah.
Do you ever discuss those?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Anyway, thank you. So if there's any final words you'd like to leave people with. What would you say?
Well, if I had one thing, I would say be patient and be optimistic. I would say those are the two things I would say. You know, I don't think change happens overnight. I would say be patient. Don't expect this guy who's in the White House to change the world overnight. I mean, we don't go in and throw a light switch. This stuff takes time. You've got to get cooperation. It's about, you know, it's about collaboration. It's about building a bigger tribe. Let's start looking beyond the me thing. It's about patience. It's about diligence. It's about hope.
So this moment in history that we're at, where Uranus is squaring Pluto, this kind of a tension and building foundation will last for about how long?
6 to 7 years. Uranus is a it takes Uranus 7 years to go through any one sign, and it entered here in March 11th of 2011. So we are, you know, we're working our way through.
So Uranus will then, in 6 or 7 years, enter Taurus.
That's right.
And that'll be a little more stable.
It'll be fixed. It'll be much more dictatorial.
Uranus will be.
Yeah. Well, the influence of what it gives. Whereas now we're in a moment of, you know, rebellion and revolution, which is really plays well off Uranus. So this is what I'm talking about potential, because the light socket has such great potential. We have to plug into that and maximize what we can get out of it.
I see. So Uranus is like that light socket, isn't it?
Yes, we've got to capitalize.
And the Pluto trigger is also doing that.
Pluto is foundational. Pluto really is. We're going to get rebuilt regardless of what Uranus does. Pluto is making sure that we are rebuilding, and we can see that. Our bridges are falling down, our systems are falling down, our organizations are not what they used to be. This is the time to rebuild, and it's about tearing down in order to rebuild.
And Capricorn's about structure.
So absolutely. It's about foundational structure.
So it's perfect that Pluto is in Capricorn at this time of rebuilding.
There is no mystery at all.
All right. And it seems like that's happening. So again, we began with this understanding of psychic weather, and that, I think that's sort of is a really nice encapsulation of this whole moment in time that we're at now.
That's the perfect word for it. You know, it really is it's sort of a cultural weather forecast.
And I think you've done a great job. I mean, I've understood a lot now, more about astrology and the importance of the outer planets just by this talk than I ever had before.
Oh, that's great. And I think what you're doing, Alan, is remarkable. You know, just the fact that you're introducing people to new ideas, new ways of looking at life is so critical, because it's just that exposure alone is invaluable.
Well, thank you. But I mean, it's invaluable for me. I mean, this is what I want, because I know there's so much more of a universe to discover. I mean, we have just begun to explore the unknown. So I do it for me, and it's great that other people also – I mean, I do it with me in mind that there's a whole bunch of other people listening, because it's for all of us. So,
well, just the simple fact that you're there, talking about it, raising people's consciousness, bringing the dialogue to a higher level, just those simple facts alone, they may seem inconsequential to you, but they really actually are very monumental.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that.
That's huge.
Thanks, Chris. I've been talking to Chris Fleischer, and your website again
is www.chrisfleischer.com or www.turningofthewheel.com.
Turning the Wheel, where you could see some of Chris's beautiful mandalas. And those, how do those mandalas relate to astrology?
Well, you know, I don't actually have an easy answer to that.
Maybe they don't. It's okay.
They're sort of a something that comes through me. So.
All right. Well, hey, no, we're all very complex people.
We are. We certainly are.
So,
yes.
Anyway, I'll see you in a couple of days, probably.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Alan, and thank you so much for having me on your show. I think what you're doing is remarkably progressive work.
Thank you. Okay. So we'll do more, and I'll let you know when this is posted as well, and then you can just link to this. And
we're good to go.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I appreciate all your work.
Thanks. I've been talking to Chris Fleischer, astrologer, really kind of a beautiful overview of this moment in time and space for the planet and all of us on this beautiful planet. If you want to know more about New Realities and the other shows that I've been doing, you can go to newrealities.com. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and you can listen to me every week right here on bbsradio.com, station 2. You can also watch my television show on YouTube/New Realities. It's also broadcast live in New York on Monday nights. That's 9 p.m. New York time on mnn.org. If you're in New York, you can watch on Time Warner Cable, Channel 57. Thanks for listening tonight, and let me know what you think about all this. Newrealities.com is my email. And next week, same time. Thank you.